Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host and reporter, Pat Flarbaum.
Hi, Susan. I'm here with two stories dear to my heart, news of an upcoming water symposium in Ames, and a tribute to wildlife photographer Roger Hill.
Well, those sound like great subjects. And we'll be ending the program with a trip up to Roland to talk with a report of some impressive middle school students from the Roland Story Middle School Builders Club. All this after our monthly report from Leanne Harder.
Good morning.
Well, good to have you here.
It is definitely December, but the weather outside this morning is fantastic. I just have actually a few things to share this morning. It's that time of the year where things start to settle down at the county and we gear up for 2018. We're starting our budget discussions right after the beginning of the year and also our capital improvements planning. So stay tuned to our website to see opportunities to get engaged and help the Board of Supervisors as they discuss what the budget will look like for starting next July. But switching gears to Story County Conservation, right now is the time to be outside while the weather's nice to take pictures to enter into the Story County Conservation Photo Contest. Conservation uses photos in their publications, social media, website, much more. A lot of the photos you see on Story County's website, too, are through the photo contest. Adult and youth divisions are both available. Submissions are due in March, and the rules and more information, all the categories. And then you can look at the 2017 entries can be found on our website, too. And I'll give our website at the end. But then Story County Conservation also shares that phase one construction of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor is nearing completion. The Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor is located at the Iowa State University Research Park in the south part of Ames. It's a park that will be managed and owned by Story County as part of the research park. It will demonstrate cutting-edge natural resource restoration and have a network of multi-use trails which help people enjoy the area. I think we'll be heading into phase two shortly after phase one is completed and then hopefully be opening here for the public to enjoy. ATV, ORM, and ORV, and snowmobile registrations are due, according to the Story County Recorder, Stacy Herridge. She would like to remind everyone that these registrations are due by December 31st, 2017. So get over to the Story County Administration Building in Nevada, because any renewals received after that date actually had to pay a $5 penalty per vehicle. So if you have several of those, it starts to add up. In addition to that registration fee, all snowmobiles that are operated on public land have to display a separate user permit, and you can get that as well at the recorder's office. There are several other vendors throughout Story County. It's hard to think about snowmobiles when there's no snow outside, but I have a feeling it will be coming here at some point in the future. The recorder's office is open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. They do note they'll be closed all day December 25th and 26th. And if you have any questions, you can call them at 515-382-7230. Then from the auditor's office, Story County Auditor Lucy Martin did note that on Wednesday, December 6th, the Iowa Secretary of State did a one-time first-class mailing to about 4,000 Story County voters who are active voter registrants but either lack an Iowa driver's license or Iowa non-operator ID card. So what they got was an ID card that will help them as they go to vote either in person or by absentee ballot. This is a new requirement starting in January 2018 that all voters in Iowa have to prove identity when voting. So the county auditors are sharing the message that the Secretary of State did send out this mailing, and those are the IDs to which they need to, with which they need to come when they come to vote. They'll have to bring.
I have a question.
Yep.
Do you know how this is handled with, if you're an absentee voter?
There is, you have to sign the card. You have to bring it when you come to request your absentee ballot. And there's a personal identification number, just kind of like on your, on when you go to, use your ATM card, whatever, a PIN that you have to put on any absentee ballot request form by the voter.
The whole point of an absentee ballot is that you can't come in and request it.
I haven't seen if they're changing the request forms at all on the absentee ballots, but I would assume that there's a spot for that PIN. It will be interesting. The auditor's office in our county is really trying to prepare, as well as all the other 98 counties in the state. We have not had mandatory identification in the state of Iowa, so it will be hopefully a seamless transition to implement this that was adopted by the state and pushed down to the local elected officials. But they're making some investments to make sure that when you go through the line in person, not absentee, but when you're in person voting, it's going to be not as slow as some might expect. But that is a good question. I'll reach out to the auditor and hopefully get back to you.
Well, we had the auditor on before this came into law, and she expressed the information that 2/3 of the county auditors opposed it. So it's just a warning to voters to be that your vote is important, and no matter how difficult people try to make it. But
yeah,
I know the auditors are going to work really hard to overcome this problem.
And then if you do have an Iowa driver's license or a non-operator ID card, you have to use that for your voting purposes. So in my case, if I show up to vote and I don't have my driver's license, I'm going to have to go back home and bring it back. So it's a little bit of a reminder to the voters out there as we get into special elections or general elections that it's going to be a little bit different process, but I'm confident that our county auditor and her office will walk us through and really, I mean, first and foremost, she wants to get people out there and vote. And so
yes,
that is their task, and they do it extremely well. Later on when we get towards the general election, I'm sure I'll be putting a call in for precinct workers too. And I've done that, and it is actually a really fun day to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You do get paid too, so that's a nice benefit. Then today is a pretty important deadline, and it's kind of the final call for volunteers to serve on our county boards and commissions. We've had it on our website, done a couple press releases. We have several openings. It's Analysis of Social Services Evaluation Team, which we call ASSET, the Board of Adjustment, the Board of Health, the Civil Service Commission, the Condemnation Commission, Conservation and Planning and Zoning Commission. So today at 5 p.m. is a deadline to get an application in if you're interested in serving as a volunteer on one of these boards and commissions. You can contact Deb Shildroth with the Board of Supervisors office at 515-382-7200, or the application is on our website, which is www.storycountyiowa.gov and then /appointment app. So it's easy to find. Again, today is the last day, relatively easy to find. Today is the last day, 5 o'clock, so we hope we get some applicants in. And then, as I noted in sharing Stacy's announcement, Stacy Herridge, Story County offices are going to be closed both on Monday, December 25th, and Tuesday, December 26th for the holidays. But as always, we're open 24 hours online at our website, which is storycountyiowa.gov.
Thank you very much, Leanne.
Oh, you are more than welcome, and happy holidays to everyone.
Yes, thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we just heard the monthly Story County Report from Leanne Harder, Outreach and Special Projects Manager. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Pat Schlarbaum, who will be bringing two reports on subjects dear to his heart.
Well, at this time, I'd like to honor a great photographer of the natural world, Roger Hill, from Roland, Iowa. Roger had hip surgery replacement this autumn, and he got along so well He wished he'd had the procedure completed on the other hip at the same time. So the healing was about to be completed this winter, and Roger was planning to return to his grizzly bears in Alaska come spring. And sadly, a blood clot manifested that took Roger's life on November 28th. And here's some fine words from a great friend, Ed Rude of Cambridge, that he entitled "The Passing of a Great Communicator." On a warm September morning, a couple of years ago, I was enjoying coffee with friends when my cell phone rang. Noticing who was calling, I switched to speaker and set it on the table. "And what's happening?" I asked. And he responded, "I'm getting a little bored, so I thought I'd give you a call," the caller replied. "I'm about 30 feet from a sow grizzly and her two cubs. They're just napping. Not much to photograph. Oops, I think they're starting to stir. I better go." My coughing companions rolled their eyes. One of them even laughed and added, "Yeah, you're right." And it was clear they didn't know who had been on the phone. If they did, they would have realized he had no need to embellish. It was just another morning in Roger Hill's life. I'm sorry to report that Roger left this world November 28th. No more will I receive such phone calls, because no one I know will be calling while they are within a few feet of grizzly bears. There was only one Roger Hill. Roger became a big part of my life back in the mid-1980s. He contacted me and asked if I might give him some advice on photographing sporting events. He added that he already did some outdoor photography. That came as no surprise. I knew of Roger and his brother Jerry and their outstanding wildlife photography. Truth was, I learned much more from Roger than he ever did from me. So from that time on, Roger and I photographed together hundreds, if not thousands, of times. It was the ultimate wildlife photographer, because he seemed to know what animals were going to do before they did. During his early years, Roger had been a hunter. He had harvested many animals, ranging from squirrels to coyotes to moose to sheep to bears. And by the time I met Roger, he had hung up his guns and purchased some high-end cameras and lenses. He once told me that he no longer had the desire to hunt except with a camera. That hunting and tracking expertise is what made him a great photographer he became. His photographs have appeared in all the major outdoor magazines. His donated photographs have meant untold income for such organizations as the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, and many other conservation groups. Following Roger was no easy job. He went where the animals were, and he rarely slowed down. If you wanted to get similar photos, you'd better be in shape. Many was the time I tried to keep up with him as he climbed mountainsides in pursuit of wild sheep and goats. I still remember watching this long legs ever climbing like a daddy long legs. Although Roger had countless photos of huge whitetail bucks, eye-popping rooster pheasants, strutting wild turkeys, and cute foxes, his true love was the beasts that inhabit such places as Wyoming, Montana, Alaska, and the Yukon. And after retirement, Roger would visit them at least once a year. There he would live with the creatures and capture them with his camera. It is with that in mind that I will share one more story. Without a firearm, Roger relied on pepper spray for protection from the more powerful animals. One recent autumn, he came across a monster bull elk who had Roger in his sights. He made a pass at him with his huge antlers. Roger realized that if he sprayed the charging animal in the eyes, he would be blinded and then would wander off into the woods to die. So he sprayed him in the chest and let the pepper drift up to his nostrils. And it worked. The elk quickly departed. Yes, that was Roger Hill. Who else would be so concerned over the welfare of a charging animal, hell-bent on gouging him, than Roger? And as his photography will carry us through the coming seasons, Roger Hill is a very tall and broad bur oak tree in matters of conservation. And for that, there's a treasured thank you to Roger Hill. And now a short segment of Roger with his beloved foxes here in central Iowa. Foxes are all around us, and they are adapting to the changing environment in ways that make us more visible to us. Let me tell you more about this wild and elusive animal. Let's start by speaking with someone who has spent more than 30 years trying to capture the beauty of foxes with his camera. Roger Hill is from Roland. He is a nature photographer and a lifelong conservationist. I caught up to him at a roadside fox den northeast of Roland. I asked him some questions to help us get to know more about foxes. Roger, would you tell our listeners what you find so fascinating about foxes?
They're cute for one thing, but those little foxes, the 2, 3, 4, 5, I've had up to 8 at one time, all looking at me at the same time, perked at you, in all 16 ears pointing at you, like you get their attention. Or else the ones where they're kissing each other and all that stuff.
What's your strategy to get the young ones to perk up their ears?
A little girl's doll, they used to always have squeakers in them.
Yeah.
Where you press on the doll and it'd make little cry noises.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just keep that in my right hand. Yeah. You don't want to do anything until they've been used to you 2 or 3 nights. Mm-hmm. You know, you sitting there, nothing happens. That's the main thing. And then they get confidence. Yeah. The best thing I've found is when I get 2, 3 shots, and a lot of times you just waste your first shot when they're not, nothing's looking at you. You just take one, then be ready, because they all look at you. But after you do that 2, 3 times, you know, nothing happened. So they start playing again. Well, then I keep that whistle type thing in my left shirt pocket. Okay. And that way all I had to do was pull my elbow in and squeak it a couple times quick and be ready. And then I'd already be on them, and that way I'd get 2, 3 more shots.
Yeah.
One time I had the 2 dens by the McCullsburg Cemetery. My camera had gotten lightly wet one day in the rewind-up lever started squeaking every time afterwards when I rewind a roll of film. And then one night I had 8 baby fox out, and I was under a camouflage netting, and they're a lot spookier then. And when I started to wind up that film, this little squeak, 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 it's a lot like a mouse squeak.
Yeah.
Anyway, 3 of them come running up right up to me. One of them came under my camouflage and had both feet on one of my shoes at one time looking up at me winding that film. And another time I took a friend along, and he was going to video the fox, then me photographing the fox. I was out about 30 feet away from the fence. There's a rocky ground around there, a lot of just plain gravel type. Small thumb-sized stones, rocks. I picked up little rocks, and I'd flip them where I wanted them to go.
Oh.
And they'd take off and run, so he'd get action stuff. Well, one time I grabbed a handful of them, and I just started throwing them towards the guy that was videoing. And I just walked them right over to him, and the last one hit the cameraman on the foot. And the fox ran out right over and smelled his foot. And he's standing there shooting foot, videoing right down on his foot with the fox on it. You get so much pleasure out of them, and then you make a... make them vulnerable. You're changing their life, accepting you. You're suckering them. You just feel bad that way. One of the most important things to me is that when you decide not to do it anymore, the last day that you're on a den, the last night that you're going to do it, you want to let them get out, and the first time they turn their back on you, not paying attention, just jump up and run straight at them. I'll usually have a handful of like soybeans or a pocket full of soybeans or corn, and I'll have that already. And when they're least expecting anything to happen, I'll just terrorize them.
Yeah.
And that just scares the living daylights. Oh, you can't believe how fast they can move. And I figure that helps them. You know, don't trust anybody.
So Roger Hill's passing is a great, great loss. Yet his inspiration is greater, and his photography will go on and on forever. So this is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area. My name is Pat Schlarbaum, and now let's have a report from Kevin Teckoff about an upcoming water symposium, which will be in the Ames City Auditorium Monday, December 18th, from 6 p.m. until 8. And this is a bit more information concerning that upcoming symposium from Kevin Teckoff. Welcome to Local Talk, Kevin Teckoff.
Thank you very much.
We're here to discuss a CAFO, Confinement Animal Feeding Operations, / Water Quality Forum that's coming to Ames Monday, December 18th, 6 p.m. until 8 at the Ames City Auditorium, 515 Clark Avenue. There have been two previous panels. What was your thinking when you invited these panelists to Decorah, Iowa?
Sure. Thanks, Pat. Well, I'm currently an attorney at the Shelter Blades Law Firm in Cedar Rapids. Prior to that, I was the U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Iowa. One of my top priorities was enforcing environmental laws, both civilly and criminally. I became aware that the magnitude of the clean water issue in Iowa, there's some 800 polluted waterways. 60% of the waterways that they've tested are polluted. So there's really two parts to that. There's the CAFO part and then the soil erosion. So I was aware that in northeast Iowa, there had been some sightings of CAFOs where the local folks really felt that it was inappropriate. In fact, the DNR director indicated that he felt that it shouldn't be allowed there, but felt like his hands were tied by the master matrix. So we put together a panel at Luther College in Decorah, and the purpose was to cover the issues legislatively, impact, and then some legislation that's facing the legislature this next session.
And you mentioned the master matrix. Apparently that's the governmental regulatory paperwork that allows a confinement animal feeding operation to site on the land.
The master matrix was created by the Iowa legislature back when CAFOs were kind of invented, and it was the purpose, at least the touted purpose, was so that the sightings would be in places appropriate. It's a scoring system that's supposed to evaluate the siting of permitted confinement feeding operations in Iowa. What's happened is that the counties have no real impact in this decision. So the matrix is on kind of automatic pilot. 97% of the CAFOs that have ever been submitted applications have been confirmed. So there's no local control, either from an environmental impact, either the smell, the stink, or the impact on waterways, or just the value of the land, and that some of these CAFOs have been put, you know, directly adjacent to where people live. So,
and I see that one of the panel members, Monty Marty, from Allamakee County, what was his situation?
Well, one of the highlights of the two panels, and then Marty will be on the Ames panel, is that his family farm in Village Creek in Allamakee County, so the far northeast corner of Iowa, his parents sold a small section of their farm, and then an individual that wanted to put CAFOs came in. And so Marty really poignantly talks about the impact and why this isn't an environmentally sound decision. In that it's close to a trout stream, and it's also close to a spring. And so it's pretty clear that it's just not a question of if, it's when there's going to be an environmental disaster from those CAFOs up in Allamakee County near Village Creek.
And go ahead and refresh us on the other panel members, please.
Well, we start out with David Johnson, a longtime state legislator who's an independent, former Republican senator, but now is with neither party, so he's pretty free to speak his mind, if you will. He was one of the co-authors some 15 years ago of the Master Matrix. So he has a really good perspective on what the thinking was, what the influencers were, and why it's not working now. He said he's learned a lot of lessons the hard way and really shares those. A man named Larry Stone, who's from Clayton County, an author and longtime Des Moines Register outdoor writer, he talks about he's been following very closely the Waltz Energy Facility in Bloody Run Creek in Clayton County, so just one county below Al McKee. Dr. Gene Tinker, who is an expert on CAFO, Mr. Matt Batrix, former DNR staff person, Steve Falk, who is an environmental policy specialist with the Environmental Law and Policy Center, and he gives a good overview of some of the legislation that's been proposed to fix the problems with the master matrix and beyond. And then Jess Marzur, who's an organizer with Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, really gives a good overview of where things sit historically and then how people can be involved at the grassroots level if they care about this issue.
And I first heard about this forum through Larry Stone, who was on one of our earlier programs, and that was in Decorah. What did you take away from that first gathering?
Well, it's pretty clear by the turnout. We had some 120 or so people come, and they were all passionate about this issue. So I think there's a real groundswell around this issue in northeast Iowa, but throughout the state of Iowa. Some 21 counties now have passed some form of resolution asking the legislature to do a moratorium on the CAFO. In other words, hold it in place until we can look at it and fix it, bring some balance to it, allow more local control. And so that really came through loud and clear in the dialogue at the end of the panel, once they kind of set the stage and people had an opportunity to ask questions. And so it's clear people really care passionately about this issue.
And then a couple of weeks ago, there was a second panel in Cedar Rapids. How did that compare?
It was very similar, although we added a panelist, David Osterberg, who's a professor emeritus at the University of Iowa College of Public Health, who's done some evidence-based work along with Dr. Jim Merchant, who is the founder of the College of Public Health, on the public health impact on CAFOs. And so David talked about that. And then we also had Chris Peterson, who's a board member of the Iowa Farmers Union. And Chris really makes the strong point that he's been in farming his whole life. About 20 years ago, his traditional farming methods with no CAFOs was considered mainstream. Now he says he's considered a niche farmer, which shows you how the dynamics have changed. Just recently, the Iowa DNR, who's responsible for the licensing, discovered there's some 5,000 animal confinement facilities that they didn't even know existed, and their job is keep track and make sure they're being done right. So this is a fast-developing issue. There's no balance. The matrix isn't being used the way it should be used, so it's an important issue for all Iowans.
And we're fortunate to host the opportunity here in Ames. Monday night, what are you hoping can complement?
Well, I think the speakers, really set the stage and really some of the fundamentals of the issue, so people that, are interested in the issue can learn how this developed, where it stands, and where it might be going, and then also some of the key issues going forward. This is an issue that all the governor candidates should address, all the legislators should address, because when you have some 800 waterways that are polluted, that really shows you things are out of whack, out of balance, and the master matrix is not doing its job and needs to be fixed so there can be balance in the siting of these CAFOs and we can protect our environment.
Very good points all around. Is there anything else that you hope can evolve here with a gathering of this prominence?
Well, it's a good chance, like I say, for people to, just to understand the fundamentals of the issue. One other stat that this really is distressing is that there's been some 700 manure spills in our waterways over the last 10 years or so. And most of those have come from CAFO situations where there's lagoon pits where collect the pig manure and then they have to be transported. And unfortunately, too many times there's a spill, and too often those spills end up in our waterways, killing fish and then polluting the streams. Farmers care about the environment, and but we need to have a better regulatory system to make sure that this doesn't happen as often as it does to protect our environment.
Very good. There are farmers on the panel. So
absolutely. Yeah. Well, these are people that lifelong farmers that really care about the environment and talk about what can be done to make things better and bring more balance to this important issue.
Looking forward to seeing you then Monday evening at the Ames Auditorium, 515 Clark Avenue, 6 p.m. until 8. We hope we have a good turnout for you, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks for the chance to visit. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, sir.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we've been talking with Kevin Tekka about the upcoming water symposium. Pat, do you want to fill in with the details and when and where again?
Yeah, it's at the Ames City Hall building. It's the old refurbished high school.
The auditorium, not the council chambers.
Okay.
The auditorium.
In the auditorium, and it'll be 6 p.m. until 8 p.m., and there's plenty of parking just west of the building.
And earlier, you heard a tribute to the late Roger Hill, nature photographer.
His passing is truly a great, great loss, but his inspiration will live on.
That's right, and that's why we'd like to play It's a Wonderful World by Big Blue Sky. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Big Blue Sky playing It's a Wonderful World, which is really also a great lead-in to the next topic we'll be talking about. This is another part of our regional news, and it's not something that you think about as being on front pages, but as I read the Nevada Journal, the Tri-County Times, the Boone News Republican, and the Story City Herald, I was struck by the large number of articles featuring the Christmas giving sponsored by schools, churches, and even one 10-year-old boy collecting gift bags for homeless children. Several of these stories were long articles with color pictures. I'll name just a few to give you the sense of variety. In Boone, the 13th annual Festival of Hope was held in the Boone High School Commons. It was presented by the Boone Hope Foundation and the employees of Boone Schools. The silent auction with 150 items, the Hope Boutique, the Hope Cafe, Stuff the Bus, and a Mitten Tree, all with musical entertainments and with a mission to continue to assist students and families with food, clothing, shelter, transportation, and medical needs. The event raised $30,400. And the bad news is that people do really need that. And the good news is that people in the community of Boone really care enough to make this kind of a fund available. But the Feldberg Lutheran Church in Huxley also was working to collect, in this case, things for the homeless in Des Moines. The 10-year-old boy, Michael Weichman, also lives in Huxley, and his Christmas wish was to collect enough money and goods to fill 50 blessings bags to be delivered to the homeless. Both these Huxley projects were assisted by Youth and Shelter Services of Des Moines to locate the people who needed them, and in the case of the blessings bags, to let people know the exact items that were needed to fill them. This is a great example of how one good turn begets another. This is an impressive list of events, and I apologize if there are any I've missed. I'm sure I have. Many are locally oriented, but I notice one in Story City Herald that has international links, and that was the Builders Club at Roland Story Middle School with its Blessings for Blank project. So I went over to Roland yesterday to talk with some of the students and their faculty sponsor, Michael Olson. The students were Lucas Werbler, Skyler Boggs, Wrigley Prop, Issy Bone, and Colby Spainhauer. Is Paul Wearson on the line?
Hello there, Susan. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, and I can because this is a call-in, we all know you're still sick. When I mentioned your name to these kids, some of them knew you. Did you recognize any of those names?
Sure, yeah. I know a lot of the kids. I do the PA for wrestling for middle school, and I have some middle school kids in my church. And then I know a lot of the kids because I volunteer at the elementary school. So throughout the elementary school days, they know who I am.
That's just fantastic, Paul. This is Pat Schlarbaum.
Hi, Pat.
Keep up the good work. That's just fantastic service. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it. It's more fun. It's like all volunteer work. You get as much as more than you give.
Well, when I mentioned that normally you would have been along for the interview, they were a little disappointed. But I'm sure that when you hear about the Builders, you probably already know about the Builders Club. I think you'll be proud of these kids.
Builders Club, Kiwanis sponsors that. And for years, we've had a key club for high school. Builders Club is what the Kiwanis provides for middle school age. So the Roland Kiwanis, I'm sure, sponsored the Builders Club at Roland Story.
Yes, that's right. And I think we'll hear about that from Michael Olson a little bit later. So let's listen to the kids now. They were there first because they had to get their interview over so they could catch their bus. I'm here with a meeting of the Builders Club at Roland Story Middle School. Why did you join Builders Club?
I think I just had like a friend tell me about it, and I was like, well, this is something to do in the mornings. It's better than just sitting in the bleachers. So I just came and started doing this, and it's been really fun.
I did it because my sister was in it, and she said it was super fun.
One of my friends mentioned it to me, and I thought it sounded fun.
Somebody mentioned it to me, and I thought I wanted to make or maybe do some community projects since I didn't have much of a reach on my own.
A couple of my friends said something about Builders Club, and I thought it'd be fun to do more than just sit around in the morning and play on our computers.
So it's a before-school activity?
Yeah. Yes.
And you get here early because the bus brings you here early. What's the purpose of Builders Club?
Yeah. I would say just to get kids active with like community and like helping out people and just working on community service instead of just staying in our own little bubbles.
Do you meet every morning?
meet every other Thursday morning.
Yeah. And what do you do at your meetings?
Like, sometimes we talk about like what we would do for like blessings for blank. Other times we would like help for like certain community projects.
How to raise money for one cause or another. Like last year we did a fundraiser for the pond to bring it back to life.
Oh, where's the pond?
The pond's out there in the courtyard.
The students have been discussing the past years of Builders Club, but for this year, the inspiring project has been Blessings for Blank. The Blank Children's Hospital in Des Moines, an 88-bed facility with 80 pediatric specialists and hundreds of pediatric nurses to care for a spectrum of serious illnesses ranging from cancer to eating disorders and autism. The Builders Club decided that providing support to the seriously ill children was a worthy task. So hear how that developed.
We just have kids, like students, donate toys to the office.
And do people bring them in from the community, or is it just from the students?
Like, if the community wants to bring them in to the office, they can.
Really, anybody can.
So what's the organization that you do? I saw that one of the objectives of...
We organize it with the help of Mr. Olson.
Majority of it's the students, and he just kind of is the adult supervision and gets us all the permissions and tells us what's possible, what's not possible. In our limits.
Mm-hmm. So then you do the communication, the publicity.
Kiwanis has been a big help to us. They, I'm not sure how often, but sometimes they'll bring us snacks for the meetings. And like this year, they got us a banner that says Builders Club in Lone Story Middle School. And they help us get out into the community, kind of get our word out, help us organize things, such as made little goodie bags for Santa when he came to Roland, and so they helped us organize that and get ready.
After the students left to catch their buses, Mr. Olson described Builders Club and its connection to other Kiwanian-sponsored projects.
Our average attendance runs in the mid-40 range. When we started Builders Club, in our first year, we were running in the mid-20s. So we've definitely seen some exponential growth, and I think some of that's because of the younger grades. There's definitely some chatter about coming to Builders Club, and we have very service-oriented students, I feel, here at Roland Story that want to do things beyond the walls of what we can do through the course of a school day. Hence why we've had so many coming at 7:45 in the morning and just making a positive contribution to the world.
Could you describe a meeting? Just what are the interactions like? Because obviously they're not just sitting there listening to you like in a class. They're doing something. What are they doing?
Absolutely. We somewhat practice the Robert's Rules of Order. We have a gavel that we bring a meeting to order. And we have people who take minutes as we go through. So all of our meetings are documented. And the meeting has an agenda of sorts. Sometimes I facilitate, sometimes students will facilitate. And then we spend a lot of time at individual levels in groups of three or four processing. What do we need to do next? What's our next step? Or what's an activity we should tackle? And it's such a student-driven organization that they really come up with the ideas, and then we come back as a big group. And we take action and essentially make a motion. Is this something that we want to do? What are the resources we need? That's where I can come in and say, okay, financially, this is what we can do or what we cannot do. Time-wise, we need to think about this a little bit more of a bigger picture, because sometimes we're a little short-sighted in terms of the impact that we could make. And so making sure that they're grounded in their approach, that's where my role essentially comes in. But then it just flows from there. Every once in a while, we'll have a parent or a family that will provide treats as well, which I think is a nice draw for the students when donuts are present. We have a wonderful representative from Kiwanis who helps facilitate our meetings as well. She's kind of our go-to liaison, so to speak, between Builders Club and Roland Kiwanis, and reports back to them And she brings ideas for us to do and then communicates our ideas to the role in Kiwanis as well. It's truly I don't want to say a magical experience, but it's one that I almost get goosebumps every meeting because I think, I can't believe this is happening. You know, to see a student body come together for a cause bigger than themselves, who are willing to give of their time, their talent, their donations of whatever that looks like, financially or otherwise. Builders Club, to me, is just a neat opportunity for any student, regardless of skill level. It's based on a person's desire to make the world a better place and to serve. And I'm just blown away in such a good way with the students that we have attending our meetings, the work that they're doing, the pride that they put into this program. If I were to ever cancel a meeting, I know that I would probably have to run because they would not be happy if I was not able to be at a meeting and had to cancel because they look forward to it so much.
Well, with the kind of leadership they have, could they run it themselves if you got sick or something?
I think they would be just fine. I think they really would. And with Blessings for Blank, this was a project that was actually initiated by a student at the high school a couple years ago. And Natalie Tryon began this as a small project, and it just morphed into something big. And last year, she had a goal to get at least 600 gifts to take to Blank Children's Hospital. And one of our representatives from Builders Club said, I'm friends with Natalie. Could we have her come and speak? And could we help with this? And could we help raise toy donations to help her reach her goal? And I said, absolutely. So Natalie came and spoke with us a couple times last year through the process. And she exceeded her goal, which then propelled us to want to continue Blessings for Blank because Natalie essentially graduated. And so we had an opportunity to pick that up, and we won't be able to do it this year to the magnitude that Natalie did. She was so involved in the community and going to churches and different organizations and businesses to collect gifts. At the middle school, we're a little restricted with that, so we're dependent upon our Norseman family, both in the community and at school, to bring in donations at this point. But a lot of thanks goes back to the legwork that Natalie really started a couple years ago. And she clearly made a huge impact on Builders Club for them to say, hey, this is something that we should continue. Even though Natalie's not here, we want to do something for the children at Blank Children's Hospital and make their Christmas and their stay at Blank a little bit more pleasant during this season.
But one of the things they said was that the gifts might be used for other than Christmas.
Hopefully there will be gifts left over as children go through the year, whether it be for birthdays or if we get into March or June when they continue to have more students or more youth come into the hospital, that they'll be able to distribute those gifts as well. Our goal would be able to supply as many gifts as possible, and for me to put a number with that, I don't even know what that looks like right now. But if we can equip them with the opportunity to give gifts, not only at Christmas but beyond, that would be fantastic.
Now, do the people at Blank know what's in those packages so that they get them to the right, to appropriate age?
Absolutely. That's a great question as well that I needed to ask just for clarity. They actually ask that the gifts come unwrapped. So then they know what the toy is, so it can be very age-appropriate, gender-appropriate. If there's a person that has an interest in Transformers, for example, then they would benefit from that gift. Or if somebody really likes to play with Play-Doh, then they can be very specific on what they give. And there's a big boom right now with coloring books, both with young people but even adults. And so I've just noted that coloring books has been a great donation item this year as well, that kind of the gift that keeps on giving. Whether they're at Blank or when they go home, too. It's been eye-opening for me just to get to know the process of what this looks like in terms of Blessings for Blank and communicating with Blank Children's Hospital here.
One of the things that I've neglected to share is just how big this is. With it starting in 1975 and having over 45,000 Builders Club members active right now, and then it's a global initiative. I mean, there's people that are in Builders Club in Italy, in the Middle East, pretty much on every continent there's a Builders Club to be found because of Kiwanis International. So the reach is really growing. And the beautiful part about it is when our students move ahead to the high school, they can participate in Key Club,
which would be the high school version of Builders Club. So this will be the starter moving up into the high school.
And what do they do in the high school?
They will do a lot of similar things in terms of service-oriented and service-learning projects as well. That'll help boost their outreach. Not 100% confident in sharing everything that they get to do in their program, but very similar in terms of the mission.
And are there any international conferences where people can go eventually?
There are. One of the things that I would like to see happen once we build up some money for us as a group is to participate in either some regional opportunities or if we can go national at some point. Because I think putting, like, for example, this group of young leaders on the map in terms of networking with people beyond the walls of Roland Story would be huge. Because I think that's where our learning is really going to occur.
This is KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM. And you have been listening to a report from the Roland Story Middle School about Builders Clubs.
What a fantastic story. Susan, thank you for covering this real essential work. You know, it's the only place on the dial where you're going to get this kind of community sponsored airways to turn over to the
middle schoolers.
We're so fortunate to have this opportunity to strengthen our community through this form of communication. And I'd like to make an appeal to any of the listeners that would like to be a part of this growing enterprise here at 410 Douglas across from the Octagon, KHOI Pantorium Building. Stop in. It's a refreshing and wonderful atmosphere. You can really see how your dollars can be maximized. And we encourage all listeners to become a member and support this worthwhile effort, again, that we're trying to strengthen community through our communication.
Yes, and you can also donate on our website, khoifm.org. Advantage of having so many volunteers, we have literally dozens doing various DJ shows or just working around the volunteers. For those of you listeners who would be interested in coming down to the station, which is a very lively place, you also have a kind of an enrichment that you can't have with a professional staff that's at the station all the time. For example, Paul, who's listening in, knew some of those middle school kids when they were fourth graders. And Pat has a great story about Roland Story fourth graders from a few years ago. Tell us about it, Pat.
I think it might have been the association that the Department of Natural Resources had with Linda Schuerman. She had a fourth grade class, and each year they would determine what sort of wildlife project they wanted to devote their fundraising efforts towards. And one year it was for the Trumpeter Swans, and they were able to get a pair close by to the Roland Story School, and they paid for the protein and the corn to feed those birds. And then when it became apparent that some legislation was going to be necessary to protect those birds, they went and lobbied at the Capitol, and the Trumpeter Swans received additional protection. And it was all due to Linda Schuerman's class at Roland Story, fourth graders. It was just what an empowerment, what a great outreach that Roland Story schools provide.
And so we are happy to be able to feature them on Local Talk.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I have been one of your hosts, Pat Schlarbaum, today with Susan Franson. Earlier in the show, we heard from Leanne Harder, Kevin Tekoff, Roger Hill, Lucas Webker, Skylar Boggs, Wrigley Prop, Issy Boyle, and Colby Spainauer, and Michael Olson and Paul Wearson. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Today's show was engineered by Jackie Norman. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was It's a Wonderful World by Big Blue Sky from their album Driftless Groove. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878. Email us at khoiradio@gmail.com or go to the contact page of our website at khoifm.org. And that's also where you can contribute a membership. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks Thank for you. Listening and see you again
on the radio.
On the radio. Funding for KHOI Radio is provided in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We encourage you to shop local this holiday season. You can support Ames growth while enjoying the wide array of local shopping and dining experiences that Ames independent businesses offer. From the Ames Chamber of Commerce, happy holidays. Let's shop local and grow Ames.
Support for KHOI comes from Mary Greeley Medical Center, providing inpatient and outpatient services on a continuum of care, located at 1111 Duff Avenue in Ames. Find out more information at www.mgmc.org. That's mgmc.org.